Hello and welcome to the relaunch of what is now known as Trad Tasman Talk. I'm Tim Wilms, editor-in-chief of The Unshackled. It is 6 p.m. on a Friday evening here in Melbourne.
And it is 8 p.m. here on a Friday evening in Auckland. And welcome everyone to our new time slot, at least for the month, and we shall see how it goes.
And new name as well, which we were flirting with a name change because the trans, it triggered a lot of our traditionalist audience. Definitely my Uncuckables and Rational Rights TV colleagues were definitely in favor of changing it to Trad, but you were sort of on the fence. What tipped you over the edge, do I?
Well, the name was stolen by the mainstream media. So after Jacinda Ardern and Scott Morrison's talk, it was named the Trans-Tasman Talk. And so I was like, okay, well, that's done it now. The name's been ruined and we've got to start again.
Well, they were last Friday. We're going to air the following Friday. That's because, well, we're going to have the final Tuesday Trans-Tasman talk. It would have been, if I go back in time, we're at March the 6th now. We haven't had a show since Tuesday the 25th. Of February, so this is our first show for March as well. We didn't have a show. No, even the week before,
because we skipped that.
Yeah, 18th. That was one since the 18th. Yeah. So we didn't do the final farewell Tuesday on the 25th because you were at the Auckland tour stop of Dave Pellow's Church and State Summit. So you said you were writing a review on it for Right Minds. Is that up?
Yes, the first installment of that is up. I decided to do quite a lengthy, in-depth review, so there are going to be three parts to it. The second part was supposed to be up this week, but I haven't got around to finishing it yet. Yeah, I really enjoyed the conference, and I'd forgotten it was clashing with the with our show. I thought maybe it would finish early, but it didn't. It was from the afternoon until the evening, and only finished about 9 or 10 p.m. So that's why I had to sort of unexpectedly cancel the show last minute. But I had a good time. It was really nice to meet Dave Pellow for the first time ever, even though we'd been in touch with each other since 2017. They had some good speakers, good local speakers, and the keynote speaker from America, Dr. Michael Brown, wasn't able to be there due to a visa issue, which was Dave's fault. He had to take the blame for that. It turned out it would have been fine, but he was expecting more trouble than he actually got, and then anyway, too late. So they did teleconference him in, though. He recorded a video and they played that, and actually worked really well for a conference, I thought. So
I know that Dave Pellow on his Facebook page and Instagram, a lot of the alt-right white nationalists, anti-Zionists, weren't too happy with Dr. Michael Brown being the keynote speaker, given that he is a Christian Zionist, and on the way dropping Dr. Michael Brown off at the airport, Dave Pellow posted this on his Instagram where he said, "Yes, the rumors are true. I'm a Mossad agent." And you can see that is Dr. Michael Brown there. He's got the really sort of old fashioned thick mo. I was impressed with just the thickness there.
Yeah, he's got a very good mustache. I very much enjoyed that. I saw some comments around that. Dr. Michael Brown is a messianic Christian. I believe he's Jewish. He was a former Jewish atheist punk rocker turned Christian. And I mentioned this a little bit in my review in terms of sort of the end times views amongst Christians around. Israel was not relevant in the context of the conference, but it factors into that where there's that a bit of that dispute as to whether there is a place for the nation of Israel in end times prophecy, and that's sort of where you get the Christian Zionists from. And there's a little bit of a dispute that goes on there, but I think at least everyone agrees in the secular nationalist sense of Zionism as the the Jewish right to a Jewish state and a Jewish homeland, that hopefully they also agree other people have as well. That should be rather undisputed. But I think there's a little bit of a difference in the way that people view prophecies, and Dr. Michael Brown and Dave Pellow, I believe, are both on that what we call dispensational premillennialist side, where they believe there will be sort of a renewing of the covenant with Israel, as opposed to everyone else who believes that the God has finished dealing with Israel.
You're a Zionist in the sense that you support the state of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And
Definitely. Yeah.
But you're not a Christian Zionist.
I'm a little bit on the fence there. That's why I wouldn't normally refer to myself as a Zionist in the religious sense, especially because in the Jewish sense, Zionism is something to do with Judaism, right? The restoration of Judaism as a religion in Israel, which is what's happening. But that's not something that necessarily I support. The view that I support of the sort of Christian restoration view, which is that the Jews will convert to Christianity. That's sort of the view, but that's not happening. So that's why there's that tension there.
And Dave Pellow wearing a Mossad shirt. Obviously, he was doing it as a troll, but it can easily be taken out of context. And we all know that Tommy Robinson, him wearing the Mossad shirt, that's been shared around all of the alt-right forums, social networks.
I'm sure they had fun with that. I got to get myself a Mossad shirt as well to wear on the show now.
You didn't get one from the Church and State Summit?
No, I'll tell Dave he's got to just hand out complimentary Mossad shirts.
He might have a stash there.
yeah, that's right. Mm. They probably send him a box every year.
And we couldn't launch on Friday's Trad Tasman talk last Friday because you were hosting a new Conservative Party meeting.
That's right. We did have a meeting in South. It was actually the first new Conservative meeting in South Auckland ever that I organized. We had a pretty good turnout, about 60 or so people on a Friday night as well, so I was pretty happy with that. And things are going well there. On the whole, I like what new Conservative are doing. They like what I'm doing, and so we get along pretty well on most issues.
And New Zealand has still got active minor parties, both in the you would say modern conservative and libertarian areas. Obviously, Cory Bernardi in Australia deregistered his Australian Conservatives Party, so there is a huge vacuum now. And the Liberal Democrats, our Libertarian Party, is still around, but they've probably lost their. Well, they have lost their most prominent voice in David Lynham in the federal parliament. They've got two Victorian state MLCs and WA MLC as well. Aaron Stonehouse, the WA one, he does a good job of getting national media. But the ACT Party, David Seymour, he's in the national parliament. I found it really bizarre that he threatened to de-accredit the Young Act because they're going to have drug paraphernalia at a university O-Week store, which isn't that the libertarian position, drug legalization?
Firstly, you have sort of the media trying to create a story where I think there probably wasn't really one per se. What you have in the ACT Party is you have that the youth wing, the young people who are basically green, sort of the green, almost green party supporters, but they understand economics to a certain degree, and so that's why they're in the ACT Party. They are obviously very much pro drug legalization. Then you've got David Seymour, who is libertarian himself, but he relies a lot on more conservative voters. And with the recent issues he's been going in on, especially defending firearms owners, defending freedom of speech. You've got a lot of more conservative people or older people, the older demographic, who are naturally just slightly more conservative. Even the libertarian ones are more conservative. And so he's got to be careful himself that he doesn't talk about legalizing drugs, because then he's back to 0.5% or whatever, that, you know, the libertarian constituency in New Zealand is less than 0.5% of the electorate. So that's why he's got to tread carefully there.
Port Film Co-op in the Unshackled YouTube chat, he's just informed me that there is a lag, and obviously I can see that you're blurry. That's because I've got it on the wrong internet connection, so just bear with me. I'm going to switch it here, and hopefully we don't interrupt the stream. So let's go.
Uh-oh. Shall I keep talking, or shall we just wait?
It's successfully switched over. So you should clear up now, we are, as always, live on the Unshackled's YouTube channel and Bright Minds YouTube channel. You're over 500 subs there now, so...
Yes, I believe so.
You can get monetized.
Is it 500?
Oh, no. Okay. I'd say you're halfway there to 1,000.
Halfway, that's what I thought. So we'll do that. I was going to have Entropy up and running, but I haven't got there yet. If you do want to do a super chat, go over on the Unshackled stream. If you want to, just give a donation, you can also send a donation to me, and even beforehand, and I'll read out your comments on air. That's fine as well. So that's at rightminds.nz/donate, for those of you who don't know. And since we're on the Friday evening slot as well, I was going to say, people probably noticed, but do grab your favorite alcoholic or non-alcoholic beverage and relax and enjoy the show.
Yeah, definitely. I noticed that at the beginning of both our streams, it said zero viewers, but there were people in the chat, but it's corrected itself now. Somebody can no longer, if they wanted to, screenshot it and claim that there was no one watching when there obviously was people in the chat. Because the Unshackled channel is monetized, I don't need to use Entropy. You can directly buy in the live chat, pressing the dollar button, send a super chat through Google YouTube. I know that Google gets it's a cut, but it's much more convenient. Senator Slayer has sent through two Australian dollars, and has said Egg Girl Dia is also live. Oh, I shouldn't call her that. I saw it pop up on my its notifications. It's just a short video about, we'll get to it in a moment, the Australian toilet paper. It's not a shortage, it's insane demand, which ordinary supply can't keep up.
Yeah. It's... Yes, the run on toilet paper is quite an amusing thing to have happen, especially because the coronavirus is going to, you know, what you want is like cold and flu tablets and Panadol or ibuprofen.
Plenty of those all around the place.
That's what's going to help you. But I do get the whole prepping thing in people, because we did buy some extra supplies, but we were already well stocked beforehand. Which I would recommend to everyone, if you're watching the show and you haven't yet done some basic prepping, and I don't mean going out and buying random junk you don't need, but you should be prepared for natural disasters, for any kind of issue that could happen. You should have at least a couple of weeks worth of food and water on hand, and then same thing with toilet paper, and you don't have to worry about exposing yourself to the latest pandemic when you're going out to the store when everyone else is trying to get their toilet paper.
Dia has just gone live with another short video titled "Dog Peed on My Clothes," which I hope that she got enough, because there's three types, four types of paper products you can buy. There's toilet paper, which there's none of in most stores nationwide. Then there's the paper towels, which are for food and beverage spills. Then there's obviously tissues for your nose. And then there's also napkins if there's food on your face. And a lot of people in Australia are improvising, just buying. There's still plenty of paper towels everywhere, just improvising. Which,
and you cut a paper towel roll in half, and then you've got two. You've got double the amount of toilet paper as well.
And there's also newspapers in Australia.
You can get a free. You can get a free subscription to the New Zealand Herald. They're always handing it out for free. So if you really are out of toilet paper, you can always use the Herald.
The NT News, they had a, which is always a quirky newspaper we have in Australia, had a toilet paper cutout there. And then, of course, there's been the more humorous suggestions about what to use for toilet paper, such as the discounted books in Kmart and Big W, including Mike Carlton's autobiography, which I haven't got the screen. But yeah, he was very triggered by somebody suggesting that he's Mike Carlton. He's the best way to describe him is the angry old lefty shock jock. He just abuses people on Twitter who don't agree with him. Really, abusive stuff. So you can, if you wanted to interact with him one time and get blocked by him, you can.
We got our first cases of coronavirus in New Zealand since the last show as well, because you had a couple in Australia at the time, I remember. We now have four official ones in New Zealand. And interestingly enough, they came from Iran and from Italy, not China directly. Of course, they went from China to Iran and to Italy and then into New Zealand. But, you know, the containment has been completely breached. And even in New Zealand, it's likely... Now, what's left of the containment has been is gone now. Our fourth patient was at a rock concert last Friday. I forget the name of the band. Tool, I think Tool, something Tool, Tools. I don't know if that rings a bell with anybody. It doesn't ring a bell with me. But apparently there were thousands of people at this conference, including coronavirus infectee or virus spreader.
This 20 past six on a Friday evening Melbourne time, the cases stand at 60. We've had two deaths. One was a 78-year-old, one was a 95-year-old. It's in northwestern Sydney where most of the cases and the two deaths have occurred. They've shut down a primary school, Epping Primary School. Our government, because obviously Morrison, it was perceived that he was slow to act during the bushfire season. He's been very proactive now, obviously taking as many precautions as possible so that there is not an outbreak. So we are prepared for an outbreak if it occurs. The old saying when it came to terrorism post 9/11, be alert but not alarmed. But because the government is getting quite prepared, and there's a lot of experts are saying there could be these amounts of deaths, there could be that happening, there could be millions of Australians who get coronavirus, and then that's filtered through still the mainstream media who, what better way to, because the coronavirus is not political, so it's turned into, because it's not just affecting one race anymore, they've basically got free run to basically do what they do best, scare the shit out of everybody. And so that's what they've been doing, sensationalizing what experts have said. And it's morphed into this toilet paper panic, where I've covered it. There was a customer pulled a knife on another customer in a Parramatta shopping center. And yesterday in a Big W in Tamworth, a man assaulted a female employee and customer. And when police tried to arrest him, he resisted, tried to grab the officer's gun, put him in a headlock, and they tasered him.
it's the media. They go from 0 to 60, you know, just like that in an instant, right? First, it's, oh, don't panic. There's nothing to worry about. Don't panic. you're all racist, you're all a bunch of Sinophobes. Go and we talked about getting Chinese takeaway last time. I did get some Chinese takeaways last week. It was very good, actually. And now all of the Sinophobia is over and everyone needs to panic and we're all going to die of coronavirus. And that's, you know, and then the media gets their stories because they want the fist fight. They want the, they got more than they bargained for here with the knives and the tasers. But, you know, then they've got more stories and on it goes, right? So that's the point. When there's nothing to worry about, they get all their stories about racism. Where now there is something to worry about, then they get all their stories about people fighting each other in the supermarkets. And so for them, it's a win-win because people will, you know, buy into the panic and they control the cycle. You know, they control the cycle. They try and control the information. They try and control people's behavior via how they spread the information.
And now they're developing the media maps because all their reporters are doing crosses from supermarkets all across. It's mainly Sydney because the media is Sydney centric. And it was at the Kyle and Jackie O show. They released a graph of toilet paper availability where red is all out and green is. So they've actually compiled that statistical information.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's where all the money is and the clicks and the advertising. You know, they're trying to stay alive, which I can, I might as well skip ahead in my notes here because if I can, give me a second. Yeah, we had an advertising loss posted by the New Zealand Herald. They switched over to this payment model, subscription model, where you can pay for their premium content, you know, being usually just when you click through to an article and you see it's premium, you're like, oh, I'm glad I didn't have to read that. And you can change that. Sorry, Tim, someone's just figured out the spelling mistake in the banner here. Amy did send you a corrected version.
Oh, which is there? Did I not?
Shackled is spelled wrong. Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's okay. I'll get the updated one.
There is an updated version. Don't worry, guys. Everyone can calm down now. It's fine.
because we changed the name of the show because, yeah. Well, there was two reasons people were being, I'll just delete the other one when I've, yep.
Yeah, it's fine. And you can switch it. It'll be fine, guys. Don't worry. It'll be fine next time. I'll carry on with this. And Tim does have the right version. He'll swap it over. And obviously, the New Zealand Herald and Stuff are both worried about losing money. And so they've got this merger between NZME and Fairfax to try and basically stem the bleeding of, you know, what the profession formerly known as journalism. Because people realize they can go around them, right? People don't need the media gatekeepers anymore, and they can, you know, people get their information somewhere else. People use ad blockers. They go to YouTube, and you know, the reputations of journalists are, you know, lower than that of politicians, and so all they can do is try to keep up with the sensationalization and generating the hype to get more clicks. And that's basically it, you know.
And we had in Australia this week, the Australian Associated Press announced that it was closing. It had been in operation since 1935. And they said that it was no longer viable, their model. They blamed all the free, uninformed news online. They basically provided content to the mainstream media when they couldn't send their own reporters, and they paid a fee. It was owned by News Corp and the Nine newspapers. And it's funny, all the lefties, they were lamenting the demise of this subsidiary of the corporate media, and the Labor MPs in Parliament, they held up signs saying thank you AAP. And my logic was that if the politicians, if they're lamenting the demise of a media outlet, then obviously they didn't think that they were being scrutinized very well.
Sorry, They've also got stuff coming from overseas, basically. So I think your Australian media does the same thing, and our media in New Zealand even gets the stuff from Australia. They have some kind of these internal deals where they pass around the information to each other. So half of the stories that we get in the New Zealand news aren't even from New Zealand. They just buy them from the Washington Post. And I suppose the Washington Post is much better at writing clickbait than the Australian Associated Press was. So out of luck. For some reason, we do have enough money in the New Zealand media pool to send journalists over to America to cover the American election. And I've sent you a video of Bernie Sanders, of Patrick Gower, everyone's favorite comedian.
Yeah, he's basically, So for context, he's like the Waleed of New Zealand, except he's white.
And he goes and finds his hero Bernie Sanders, and he thinks that because he's a communist from New Zealand, that the American communists will want to see him, and it doesn't quite go as planned.
We're from New Zealand.
Okay, now is not a good time, sir.
Oh, so we came a long way.
I know. We'll see you tonight. We'll be at Essex Junction tonight.
Yeah. Just a question from Kiwis. Who actually like you quite a lot.
We'll see you tonight.
We know that you like our Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, and I guess I always just wanted to ask, we know what kind of president you'll be for the world, and we know what kind of president you say you'll be for the United States, but what about for the world?
Take care.
Okay. Hey, Mr. Sanders. New Zealand, sorry to trouble you guys.
Okay.
All right. Good luck tonight.
Let's go. Now that is not journalism, that's being a creepy fanboy.
And anyway, that's in
Vermont.
It's almost as good as the last time where you went to Colorado to smoke weed and ended up putting on drag. You might remember that.
Oh, is that what it does to people?
Yes, it does. That's where the whole trans issue came from. That's why we had to drop the trans as well. It's the too much weed smoking going on, and people swapping genders because of it.
So that's at Bernie Sanders' private residence in Vermont. And is this recent?
Yeah. That was just yesterday, the day before. It was this week. You said it's private residence in Vermont, not his beach house or his house in Washington. And you can see that the millionaire socialist had two cars, two SUVs outside his house.
Well, that's one for him, one for his wife. But where was the Secret Service protection? He's a presidential candidate, and he just looks like some random old dude walking in the morning, and he's got some creepy stalker with a microphone. Who knows what, it could be a machine gun underneath the microphone foam.
It's clearly nobody is a threat to Bernie Sanders. So that's the left are so tolerant that you see all the right wing politicians have Secret Service protection. But I'm not sure why, for some reason, Bernie Sanders doesn't qualify. But clearly everyone loves Bernie Sanders, so he's perfectly safe. But it would be hilarious if this is the reason why Bernie Sanders ends up getting Secret Service protection, because he's being harassed by Patrick Gower from New Zealand.
And we're talking about the demise of the mainstream media, mainly due to their revenues declining. But Patrick Gower's was it News Hub, which is Media Works, which produced the project NZ. They still have this. Has he done anything else on that trip apart from just stalk Bernie Sanders?
It's all that I've seen. Apparently, he'll do one of these shows that I won't watch, but if there's anything good on it, people will post it on Facebook. So he'll do some hour or half hour segment about whatever, and that'll be it. And then if he says anything that's not true and you complain to the press council, they'll say that his opinions are not, they don't have to be accurate because they're his opinions. So
This is not a super chat on the Unshackled chat, but I'd encourage all the people who are interacting to send one. But this is such a good comment; it deserves to be read out for free from James Boom. How does it feel to have that creep Gower representing NZ? Do I? Because he's basically saying that New Zealand loves socialists like him.
Yeah, we have Jacinda. We have a female young version of Bernie Sanders in New Zealand. Mm. It's kind of sad. I see people in the Australian chat are asking who Patrick Gower is as well, which basically he's New Zealand's favorite comedian, and he's similar to, who's your guy?
Waleed Ali, the host of the project in Australia. Channel 10 is the... It is the project. For some reason, its ratings are declining, but they're still keeping it on air. And it was not Waleed, but another project host, Lisa Wilkinson, who did the creepy fangirling interview with Jacinta Ardern. It would have been 6 months ago now. And then, was it... she's married to Lisa Wilkinson. Peter Fitzsimons, who's the president of the Australian Republican movement. He's commonly known as a bandana man, and he constantly gets all his predictions wrong. And he called his wife during the interview and is like, "I'll put you on to Jacinta." And it was like just cringe, typical mainstream media fawning, except on a married leftist power couple level. That's the reason why Australia will never become a republic, because Bandana Man is their leader.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. I don't think New Zealand doesn't want to become a third world banana republic either. So I think Australia, just stay away from that. Don't do it. So yeah, the final wrap up on this is the best part about having Paddy representing New Zealand is that it's hilarious. Right, from the Lauren Southern and Stefan Molyneux interview all the way through to this most recent one, like it's hilarious every single time. So there is a good comedic element to it, and I do enjoy, like, it is enjoyable just to for the cringe, really.
Now, both Australia and New Zealand, as you just said, we're not republics. We're still part of the Commonwealth of Nations. And we're obviously the two Commonwealth nations of the South Pacific, separated by the Tasman Sea. But it's been rough times for trans-Tasman relations with the trans-Tasman talks last week. Jacinta Ardern, was called a spray at Scott Morrison during their joint press conference at Kirribilli, where it's been a point of diplomatic tension for over a year now. And
it has been longer than that, even. I mean, it's been an issue, you know, for almost better part of a decade, I would think, getting close to that. The deportations and the way that Australians are treated in New Zealand, New Zealanders are treated in Australia, because of that sort of open borders situation that we have, there's a little bit of tension there, always.
And I remember when I was analysing the crime statistics, when the Sudanese crime wave in Melbourne was spiking, our Victorian Crime Statistics Agency releases it by country of origin, and guess which country of origin is second on that list? It is New Zealand. And so obviously the foreign-born criminals who we're deporting after they finish their sentences are, of course, most of them come from New Zealand. And as is common because Australia and New Zealand, you don't need a visa to travel in between the nations, there's a lot of New Zealanders and New Zealand families who in Australia, they become permanent residents, but not Australian citizens. And so, Peter Dutton, he's been the immigration and now home affairs minister that's hit that deport button as much as he can, which, as an Australian nationalist, if we can get rid of our criminals, if they're not Australians, then we should. But of course, New Zealand, if This is what Jacinda Ardern said. They're not Kiwis. They've lived maybe, what, 1 or 2 years of their lives in New Zealand, so why should they be our problem? But of course, Australia is on firm legal grounds to do this because they are not Australian citizens, technically New Zealand citizens. Yep. And if you're a dumb criminal, you're not going to be smart enough to take out Australian citizenship before you commit your mass crimes.
Well, exactly. That's a problem that we have, I believe, with the sort of relationship there, where if we wanted to fix that up, we would probably need something along the lines of having a deal where we basically automatically revoke citizenship of New Zealanders who are over there, and they automatically get Australian citizenship, something along those lines. The issue here is that New Zealand is not willing, and when I say New Zealand is not willing, New Zealand would be willing, but Jacinda Ardern is not willing to do this. Her government is not willing to do this, and probably the national government isn't either, to say, okay, well, we're going to be deporting Australian criminals, we're going to be deporting criminals from other countries, you know, we can do the same thing. And if Australia complains, well, hey, then we can negotiate on a level playing field. We can say, okay, fine, we'll stop deporting our criminals if you stop deporting yours, or whatever, or maybe only on a certain basis. There would be leverage and negotiation to be had, but there isn't. At the moment, it's just like, okay, well, we're not going to do anything, you know, we're not going to do anything back to you. We're just going to, Jacinda's just going to stand there on a podium in Sydney during a Trans-Tasman talk and say, you know, oh, this is so mean. You know, stop being mean to us. And she has been praised a little bit. Mike Hosking, who's known as being kind of like the most right-wing pundit in New Zealand, he did praise her by saying, oh, you know, she was sort of decisive and she's willing to criticize them. So she did get some brownie points at home here for doing that. Beyond people saying, oh, well, at least she was assertive, I don't really think people agree with her that much, because it is a case that we can see, well, Australia does have every right to do that. We would have every right to do the same. There's nothing that can be done about it from a legal perspective, unless we close the borders a little bit more.
Yeah, our Australian media, apart from the Ardern fawners online and in the commentariat, but the Sky News After Dark show, is they gave Jacinda Ardern a decent rebuke, accused her of political grandstanding, because obviously you have the election in September, and Peter Dutton, our Home Affairs Minister, also said the same thing. He said it was disappointing. And then your Deputy Prime Minister, Leader of New Zealand First, Winston Peters, he upped it up, saying that about Dutton, well, I could say the same thing about political grandstanding. He's deporting all these foreign criminals to New Zealand because he wants to show that the coalition's tough on national security. And of course, he used that as a platform to launch his prime ministerial challenge against Malcolm Turnbull. And then he went even further, Winston Peters, and said that the worst criminal that we've ever had in New Zealand was an Australian, Brenton Tarrant, the Christchurch massacre shooter, and said, oh, we haven't lambasted Australia over that. So got out the Tarrant card. So really upped it up. And Winston Peters, he also sort of played the sort of, well, I've been around in politics for much longer than ScoMo and Omo and Dutton. You know, don't talk to me about this sort of stuff.
Yeah, and Winston Peters loves his bluster. But he's not willing to do anything on this. And okay, well, you want to play the Brenton Tarrant card, then deport him, right? Somebody promised to deport him, and see what Australia does, right? Maybe then you have some leverage to say, well, hey, look, I should probably say, like, alleged, you know, at this, I should, you know, we still have to say alleged whatever, because have this court case that's happening apparently in a few months. But legal disclaimers aside here, we say, we're just deep, you know, okay, we're going to deport him, And if Australia, you know, if Australia says, oh, well, you know, hey, hang on a minute, well, then we have somewhere that we can negotiate, right? But unless someone's willing to do that, then there's no negotiation. There's no leverage. Nothing's going to happen.
That would be the ultimate nuclear option by the New Zealand government if they wanted some sort of...
Well, they should use it. Absolutely.
Well, yeah, because, of course, Peter Dutton doesn't want Brenton Tarrant roaming the streets of Australia. He wouldn't be. He wouldn't be allowed to.
He'd be arrested. He'd be locked up in Australia, basically. But then you can pay for him. He's yours. You can pay for him.
Mm. But this is why we do this show, because Australia and New Zealand politics is becoming more intertwined, and so the response, the Australian commentariat response to Winston Peters getting involved in what about your New Zealand First Foundation and the investigation of the Sirius Fraud Squad, which they're all under investigation now.
It's hard to keep up. So we know we hadn't yet talked about who had been charged at the time, but we have four people charged on the National Party side. We haven't had anyone charged on the New Zealand First side yet, and we've had two more investigations at the very least into Labour Party officials. So I'll take them one at a time here. One of the MPs charged was Jamie Lee Ross, who was the whistleblower on the National Party case, and a former National Party MP. He has also recently talked in Parliament about another $150,000 donation that he says was made by the Chinese Communist government. Actually, the government laundered this money through to the National Party in New Zealand. That's his claim that he made in Parliament under parliamentary privilege. So we'll see how that comes through. I mean, he essentially could lie and not face any repercussions legally. $200,000 donations under scrutiny in the National Party that came from these. You have New Zealand First Foundation still under investigation. No real news on that, other than that there is a very serious investigation underway, and that likely they have broken some kind of law. We just need to find out which one. And then the two Labour Party mayors, which maybe Jacinda Ardern will disavow, like she disavowed her Wellington candidate who lost the election. the Auckland mayor and, I want to check, the Christchurch mayor are both under investigation for electoral fraud as well. So election expenses in terms of how donations were declared to their campaigns. And we know that several of them also received donations from the same Chinese businessmen who were donating money to the National Party, or if not the businessmen themselves, from their relatives or whatever, which is suspicious in and of itself. So that's the least corrupt country on earth. We are officially the least corrupt country on earth, according to the official statistics from either the UN or one of these other organizations that monitors corruption worldwide. So that's life in the least corrupt country on earth, with at least four different investigations currently ongoing into electoral fraud.
I'll be interested in the next rankings then.
Yeah, exactly. you got to pay for the rankings. That's how fraud rankings work. The more you pay, the less fraudulent you are.
We'll go back to the coronavirus now, but the economic impact. But I didn't get a chance to ask you before. Is there any panic buying shortages in New Zealand?
So we had some pictures of Pack and Saves that were empty specifically, which is sort of like the more discount store. I went to checked in at the local Countdown like the day after, which is the same as was a Woolworths, owned by a Woolworths.
Yes, yeah, so it's got the same Wapple logo.
And that was fine. There were a couple of people buying some canned goods and some toilet paper and stuff, and the same that I was, just topping up supplies a little bit. But very few people were there. So it was like early in the morning as well, which helped. But beyond that, I didn't see anything that looked like panic buying, except for in photos, probably out west and east and north more so, especially among areas where you have concentrations of ethnicities where the virus is a lot more prominent. So especially among Japanese and Korean and Chinese and Iranian groups, where you have more concentrations of those people around the city. I think you had a lot more panic buying going on there, simply because they knew it was far more likely that somebody would come from one of those countries, you know, into their local communities and spread the virus, which is basically what's happened. There's a lot more lockdown, people cancelling events, in West Auckland, because that's where we have a lot more of the virus at the moment. Even though we only have 4 cases, we know there's going to be more. So, and the usual things like hand sanitizer's gone everywhere. But that's really it. Like, and other than that, the shelves are still well packed in New Zealand, as far as I've seen. But I haven't been to the shops the last 3, 4, 5, well, more than that, days now, nearly a whole week. So it'll be interesting to check it out in the next couple of days. I'll have a little look for you.
We had the Australian quarterly growth figures released by the Treasurer Josh Frydenberg, where the economy increased by 0.5% to the quarter to December, but that doesn't account for the worst of the bushfires and the coronavirus. And there's a real worry that we will enter into recession because of the coronavirus. There's a travel ban that's been extended not just from China but to South Korea now, and there's been talk of the government introducing a fiscal stimulus, but the sort of with all of this panic buying, it is a stimulus in itself, because we have all of the toilet paper factories now going 24 hours a day. They've had 1,000% increase, and
extra staff, hiring extra staff to make more toilet paper. Yeah. And I saw this as well from the UK, from Jacob Rees-Mogg in the UK. I was listening to an interview with him, and he mentioned about how he reckons there's not likely to be too much of an economic downturn because the supply chains are redirected. So if, for instance, the production of iPhones are held up because China is running low on production, people will still buy other things, for instance, buying more toilet paper, as we've mentioned. So likely people are still spending the money. But there is a lot of talk in New Zealand as well about lowering the interest rates. We've got a review coming up this month.
Yeah, ours went down again to 0.5% this week, our Reserve Bank, Matt.
So that's a shift. There's speculation ours is going to drop to match, perhaps. So we're at 1.0. We'll be dropping probably to 0.75 or 0.5 is what some people are advocating for. So that's certainly possible, but it doesn't. It only stimulates the economy in terms of making people borrow more money, right? That's the idea. So basically, businesses are in trouble. Let make them take out more loans, and that will stimulate the economy. And
I wonder if
money and then stimulate the economy.
Yeah, I should. I don't read Paul Krugman's column myself. I listen to Tom Woods and Bob Murphy's Contra Krugman podcast, where they analyze the columns for us. I wonder if he's going to talk about the coronavirus that can be an economic stimulus, because he said stuff that war and disaster can generate economic activity. So, Paul Krugman, this is your moment. You've got your New York Times column.
Yeah, you're. I'm sure he's either already done it or will be doing it soon. I did see some speculation around that on the Marginal Revolution blog. So, there's definitely going to be a lot of talk about that, and we'll have to just wait and see, really. But the best thing to do would be some kind of tax cuts. Basically, if people are struggling, is make them pay less tax, then they'll be doing better. But no, you're not going to get that from our Labour government, and I suspect you might not even get it from your Liberal government either.
The reason why toilet paper production has been able to be ramped up so much is because it's made in Australia. And so there's obviously the coronavirus is affecting global trade. And so there's been a lot of talk that will the coronavirus see the end to globalization, outsourcing, and that localism will return, producing things locally to basically, because I had Martin North, an Australian economist, on my show Wednesday. He talked about how we only have 30 days supply of petrol in Australia because it all comes from overseas. And our most influential broadcaster, Alan Jones, he talked about the fact that we basically need to reassert our resource production independence, where the neoliberal consensus has been for 25 years that it doesn't matter if our factories close, we just can get it all overseas, and people will just get other jobs in Australia.
Yeah, exactly. And so, what's more efficient? It's more efficient for the economy to make these things elsewhere, which it can be, until you have some kind of disaster, right? So you're reducing resilience, you're being slightly more efficient with your resources at the with greater risk. And I know that Steve Turley, who I like to watch, he's been saying this as well, that you know, the coronavirus is seeing a resurgence of nationalism. You know, people reasserting their borders, closing their borders, promoting localism, local production, all of that is definitely happening. Coronavirus is probably overhyped, we're talking about it spreading the hype. But I think in terms of using it promoting it as a political tool for nationalists, it's useful to highlight the dangers of at least the type of globalization that we've been having, and to say there needs to be more focus on the local, and there needs to be more focus on national resilience, especially because you can't trust the commies in China to lie about something like this and then, you know, disrupt local supply chains. So there you go. There's finally a positive, something positive to come out of the disease. Who knows? Whether that will catch on and hold, who knows? Especially if it's overblown, it can always, come back to haunt you later. So you should be careful with these things. And like I said at the beginning of the show, it's always good to be prepared for natural disasters or anything like that. So that is the big lesson to take away.
A story that's broken overnight, know of our most annoying Green Senator, Sarah Hanson-Young, who she's constantly caught out with her expenses. She ends up having to repay some, and she preaches about climate change, reducing carbon footprint, but her travel bills are always up there amongst the highest.
We had this announced in New Zealand last night as well. The Greens, the number one spenders, and the biggest climate change talkers are the number one travelers. So that's the do as I say, not as I do crowd, who care so much about global warming that they're apparently the biggest causes of it.
Well, it's been revealed that Sarah Hanson-Young, she wrote a character reference for a man who pleaded guilty to a domestic violence incident. She vouched for the good character of a political lobbyist who pleaded guilty to domestic violence charges on the grounds his wife supported the move. She's come under sustained attack on social media after it emerged she'd provided a character reference, and subsequently the man did not have a conviction recorded. During the incident, the political lobbyist, who cannot be named, there shouldn't be, in my opinion, a suppression order. He flew into rage after he was asked to peel potatoes for Christmas lunch before pushing and slapping his wife, prompting a couple's daughter to call 000. In a statement to New Daily, this is by their political editor, Samantha Maiden, she said that she did not condone domestic violence. No conviction was recorded in this matter. I was asked to provide a character reference for the husband. I did this support with the full support of the wife, whom I'm also. No, I do not condone domestic violence. Any suggestion otherwise is absurd. In the interest of the family concerning their privacy, I do not make uh, do not intend to make any further comment. And this is Sally Rugg. She is one of the most prominent leftist activists. She's the director of Change.org Australia. This is just her link to that, but basically she said in another tweet, you know, what the hell is this? And this is the same Green senator who was awarded $120,000 in damages after winning a defamation case against former Liberal Democrat David Lionhelm, who urged her to stop shagging men in Parliament. She declared that matter a win for women standing up to bullying.
Yeah. Yes, I do remember we had a chat about that.
Yes.
The defamation suit. Of course. He was right, of course. And we'll see what happens there.
Course, Sarah Hanson-Young, she recently shared, after we had that horrific murder-suicide in Brisbane, that she agreed that domestic violence was never okay. And this is a clear case of hypocrisy, that she believed the man was of good character and that it was not the man that she knew. But if you actually follow domestic violence cases, that's what's always said about the, yep, the man by people who don't know. I'm not saying that that's the case with this unnamed man here, but it's been pointed out the inconsistencies and double standards that she's had. And it's actually credit to a lot of those on the left side of politics who've called out this hypocrisy from Sarah Hanson-Young, including, well, our chief feminist commentator, Clementine Ford, who said, "Sarah Hanson-Young is always and always has been a diabolically awful individual who has used the pretense of progressive politics to mask her own narcissism. I am 100% unsurprised that she provided a character reference for a domestic violence abuser." Another person who reacted and reached out to me tonight, it's gone off the whole thing there, but this is somebody who said that, well, they agreed that David Lionhelm is a horrible person, what he did was absolutely wrong, but watching her complain about being bullied when she has a alleged history of bullying her staff, and Clementine Ford said, basically the Greens should refuse to endorse Sarah Hanson-Young at the next election if they want to pretend they care about progressive politics and candidates. And the defamation finding against David Lionhelm was because the judge found that he implied that she was a misandrist and a hypocrite, and yep, it's pending appeal, this finding, but given, well, this is a clear example of hypocrisy on Sarah Hanson-Young's part, that maybe, well, there's at least a case for revising down the damages. He also has to pay $500,000 to her in costs as well. And Clementine Ford, she is extremely influential, and given that criticism, I shouldn't use any other expression for that, this has still got a long way to go. And it could be the end of her political career. She is 6 months into a 6-year Senate term. But when your own side start to basically air the dirty laundry and reveal that you have a history of bullying yourself, and you know that she's about to be thrown under the bus by her own side.
Yeah, well, it is good to see, sort of funny to see when the left, when you're not woke enough for the left, and then they come for you, and that's always amusing to watch from the outside. Yeah. But as much, I mean, we've talked about Clementine Ford on the show in the past, and we don't like her very much, obviously, but she is at least consistent. Is consistent in her man-hating.
She actually, I believe, I've said this previously, that she is turning a corner, because she is now a mother to a young son, and she's written about how she wants to raise him in a society where he can be the man that he wants to be. And so she's actually evolved from the kill all men hashtag because she's got this maternal instinct now, because she has given birth to a male, and obviously, but she's built this career off this toxic femininity, and but obviously you can see that she's now struggling with this natural maternal instinct. And so like I have faith that she's coming around, and this is a sign of it here, that she's just called BS on Sarah Hanson Young, and she's 100% right. So
I don't quite agree with your optimism, but I do hope that you're right. And at least I can say that she is a genuine feminist in that regard, and consistent. And in that news as well, we actually have a Green MP in New Zealand, a former Green MP who passed away suddenly yesterday, Janine Fitzsimmons, and she was co-leader of the Green Party. She was 75 years old, and she was the final. She was the only Green MP to ever win an electorate seat in New Zealand in 1999. So unlike in Australia, you just have to get 5% of the general vote rather than win an electorate to get into parliament. But she's the only Green in New Zealand who's ever actually managed to win a popular vote. She was consistent. And you see people from all across the political spectrum say, hey, I disagree with the politics, but she was consistent and she was genuine and she really believed, in the green agenda, and she wasn't a communist, in disguise. And so there you have quite the contrast with the current crop of green MPs that we have, who are basically willing to sell themselves out. They've been completely screwed over this electoral cycle. They've got barely anything through. They had to put up with all kinds of nonsense. We've talked about Shane Jones a gazillion times on the show. This week, apparently, he was saying racist things. I say quote-unquote racist things.
Well, what were these racist things?
He said that Indians were people coming from New Delhi were ruining New Zealand's institutions, basically saying we have too many people coming here from New Delhi, and that they're ruining New Zealand. So that's what he said. But anyway, the Greens put up with him like, oh, that's not, they don't, there's no demand that he stood down. He's still a top high level cabinet MP. They've had various green policies turned around. We have like 17 or 19 new mines on conservation land opened since the Greens took over the environmental portfolio. So they, this is all contradictory to all the stuff they've been promising since forever. And the old Green MPs are actually sometimes, submitting against bills that the new Green MPs are voting for, because the new Green MPs want power above everything, and the old Green MPs cared about the environment more than power. And so there you've got that same situation in Australia, basically, where the ones that are in parliament are actually very corrupt and inconsistent, or not necessarily corrupt, but you just say power hungry and inconsistent, right? They're just hypocrites, and they're out there. I think the word was for Sarah Hanson Young was narcissism. They're narcissistic like that, and they think it's all about them.
You mentioned that, Shane Jones, this is what is about 50th racism scandal?
Yeah, something like that. He has we were at a point in the show where we were doing a Shane Jones segment every single week, because he was getting in hot water every single week. But because he's the number two man, Winston Peters' right hand man, the deputy prime minister's right hand man, the prime minister herself doesn't dare to touch him, and she just says, if people don't like what he says, then don't vote for him.
We've had a few BS, racism, sexism, political controversies this week. It was last week, Treasurer Josh Frydenberg, he was mocking the Labor Shadow Treasurer Jim Chalmers' adoption of Jacinta Ardern's well-being budget, and he used a Hindu meditation analogy. And so SBS found a whole bunch of Hindus which were offended by that, and so Josh Frydenberg apologized for that. And it just broke last night because the Senator and Senate estimates. Deborah O'Neill, who's a Labour senator, she didn't play the whole context of it, just the bit where the chair of the Senate committee that she's on, James McGrath, LNP senator, kept telling her to shut it, basically, and she was saying, "How dare you? You know,
how dare you?
Yes,
how dare you?
This is typical male behavior against women in the workplace." And James McGrath, he's one of the most uncucked politicians in the parliament, saying, "Oh, if you want to go out outside the parliament to do a press conference whinging about it, be my guest. You can have a wine, you know, whatever, I don't care." And now Pacific Islands Minister Alex Hawke has got in trouble for accusing Labour MP Anne Ali, who was the first Muslim woman elected to our nation's parliament, for he believes that she's claiming that her multicultural story is better than others, and so that's another scandal there. But yeah. As this shy Sarah Hanson-Young saga shows, all these political outrages are weaponized, and as we know, the those who scream about sexism and whatever else, they get caught out eventually in their own hypocrisy.
Well, it's like the French Revolution, where, you know, they're busy guillotining everyone, and they're the next ones who get guillotined, or the Russian Revolution, where you know, the guy running the KGB, you know, the next week he was the one who was at the, you know, at the bottom of the in the basement getting shot in the back of the head because, you know, he had said something wrong. You know, that's basically the woke cycle, and it goes on. And it looks like we're getting to the point now where there's so many scandals, there's so many things for people to be offended at that people become desensitized to it, and it doesn't matter so much anymore. That likely is one of the consequences. And we are over time.
Yeah.
Just before you move, would say anything else. If there's anything else, go for it. And otherwise.
Oh yes, yeah. You were going to give a March for Life report.
I did want to give a short report on the March for Life, which was last Saturday. It was in Auckland. We had 3,500 people turn up for the march. This was the first one that we had in Auckland ever. I did a time lapse on the Riot Minds NZ YouTube channel, if you want to have a look at that. Had some good speeches, some good speakers. I might still do a proper typed up report on this. Some quite emotional stories that were shared. I think there was a little bit too much, and they always kind of try to make it a bit bright. You know, like it should be a bit more of a serious endeavor, and this sort of an idea to make, you know, to be a little bit more happy. There's not really much to be happy about. We've had nearly 500,000. Babies murdered in the womb since abortion became semi-legal in the 70s, and 13,000 every year, 36 every single day. It's a very high number for a small country like New Zealand, and that's something that should be treated far more tragically. And I think that there's often a bit of kid glove stuff that goes on at the March for Life, and there's very little media attention as well, which would always, you know, the media tries to ignore it. But the one thing they didn't ignore actually was a protest outside of Parliament a couple of days later, when the second vote on the abortion legalization bill or decriminalization bill, whatever it's called, was being passed, which did pass easily, 81 votes in favor, 39 against. They had about a dozen protesters who came to protest outside of Parliament, and they were holding signs, you know, pictures of aborted babies, and signs with some, you know, strong messaging on how abortion is murder. And that actually got a reaction from the media. They had dozens of articles that were published. Andrew Little, Jacinda Ardern, both were like, "Oh, this is appalling. This is extremism. This is, you know," they were really offended and really triggered by people calling out abortion for what it is. So I would encourage the pro-lifers and the March for Life to be more bold on that in the future, and actually demand more attention, and actually call abortion out and actually show it for what it is. So both of these events were quite good to see this past week. And you know, it's only the beginning.
Yeah, and the decriminalization bill that's legalizing abortions up until birth, and unlike euthanasia and marijuana, which there's going to be a referendum on same time as the election.
There's no referendum on this, of course.
No, yes, which should be an outrage as well, given that the people are allowed to vote on these other controversial issues.
And I'm personally not a fan of referenda on these issues, because they shouldn't be, you know, you shouldn't be voting on whether it's okay to kill unborn babies. But anyway, this is the world we live in, and there's a lot of work to be done. There are people waking up now, and maybe that's the silver lining, if we can call it that, to this bill, because it will pass. And but I think more people will wake up to the truth because of it. So you've got to think, you know, we're looking ahead. There are more opportunities, I believe, to reach people and to wake them up and to show them the horrific reality of what's going on.
Yeah, keep up the fight over there, because, well, this is another reason why mainstream media is dying and should die, because it is ignoring critical issues such as
they're not just ignoring it, they're campaigning on the other side,
right? Yes.
they're campaigning for their agenda. They're the media party, and they've got their agenda. That's what they're pushing.
Well, we only went 10 minutes over time, so we basically caught up on the past 2 weeks all in the one show on the first Trad Tasman talk. We didn't have too many teething problems. While we're on air, I deleted the incorrect ones. Good. From my, so I never get them confused again. Yeah. But it's Zamy's fault for misspelling in the first place. I'll deflect.
Yeah, nice try. You won't get that. She is in the chat. She's in the chat. She's watching you, Tim.
She'll
have some stern words to you. Somebody did ask if PewDiePie copied my look. Yes, he did, actually. Amy did cut my hair before PewDiePie cut his hair. So it's just the way things are when you're famous. You know, people always copying your stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And, well, yeah. In all seriousness, thank you, Amy, for designing the new graphics. And we've got James Fox Higgins working on the new intro and outro graphics. And we'll need a new voiceover as well. So Morgan Munro, our voiceover guy, will do that. We're still transitioning from Trans Tasman to Trad Tasman talk.
Yes.
If I can.
Very good trans joke.
Yeah, do the pun. And was that also in the, this, we're about to wrap up now, so last chance to send through a super chat on the Untracked Lords YouTube channel. Not only have they been triggered over the trans name, but there was a lot of triggering last night on the Uncuckables over, I thought it was a red shirt, but it comes across as a pink shirt on
pink.
Screen.
I saw it was
yes,
pink.
Yes, yes. And so I will make a commitment now that I will never wear that shirt on the air again. You've successfully pink shamed me. So yes, it'll be destroyed. Whatever. Yeah, you won't see it again.
You shirt burning. Very good. Before we go further over time, I'll do my wrap up and do send through a super chat for Tim still. Now you have the chance. You can find my writing on rightminds.nz and also on the bfd.co.nz. The live stream is always embedded on the bfd.co.nz as well. So if anybody from over there is watching, thank you very much as well. You can go to rightminds.nz/donate if you want to help support me in terms of just keeping the website up and running and handling some basic costs and possibly some court expenses in the near future. That's coming along, and we'll see you next week. We're planning to keep this time slot for at least this month to try it out. I see the audience numbers have been pretty stable, so
yeah, everyone's been tuning in, so the audience like it, and I like it as well, because it's just past 7 p.m. here. I get to have a bit of a night out on a Friday. It's always good to finish early on a Friday.
And I'll let you do your wrap up, and then we're done.
Yeah, and you can enjoy your, what was you having, gin, was it, or whiskey?
It's gin. It was an amber gin from South Africa. But it's all gone now. Let's get another glass.
Of course, you can catch up with all of the Unshackled production show archive in our latest written content on the unshackled.net. Support our productions by taking out a membership at theunshackled.net/membership or donate via theunshackled.net/donate. I'll be back next week with the new Australian alt media primetime lineup. I'm definitely going to be keeping on 5 nights a week now with the rearrangement. So I'll be back for Wilms Front 7 p.m. Melbourne time Monday on the Tim Wilms YouTube and DLive channel. You can go to my personal website, timwilms.com, for my social media links and the podcast links as well. And remember, Uncuckables twice a week now, Tuesdays and Thursdays. Wilms Front is twice a week, Mondays and Wednesdays. And of course, we've still got XYZ Live, Maddie Rose Live, D. Beltran Live, Dusty Bogans, Random Live Streams, James Sox Higgins Show, and also the Patriarchy Hour. And all of these being uploaded and backed up on rationalrise.tv. They're the free speech self-hosted video website set up by James Fox Higgins. So if we ever get the cord pulled from YouTube, that's where you can find us.
All right, thank you everyone, and good night. We will see you next week.
Yeah, we'll see you next Friday.